You ready there, Ryan?
Stand by.
Yes.
Welcome to Going the Distance.
Thank you, Ruben. Welcome here, too.
Yeah. Well, welcome, Ryan.
It's good to be here.
It's great that you're here.
Thank you.
It's great that you're here.
There this we go. Well, we're off the flying start. Oh. Let me just check windows. Let's just see where we are here. Cube paper wrestling. Okay. So this is episode 9.
Wow, 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 wow. We have gone the distance. This is round 9. How many rounds are there in a boxing? 18? Or is that, wow. Is that golf?
It's is there 18 holes in golf?
In golf? I suspect so.
Yeah, there's 3 holes in a bowling ball. There's 18 holes in golf. There's 15 rounds in my understanding in a heavyweight Rocky Apollo fight, there's 15 rounds. It can go, the max is 15 rounds. But other classes of boxing can have less rounds, and I'm not going to embarrass myself and even pretend to know how many are in each class or welterweight or whatever.
I'm okay embarrassing myself. I was at a sports bar with, I guess, a group of guys. People were talking about Crosby. And so my ears naturally peaked because I'm a big fan of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
Oh, yes.
So I'm thinking David Crosby. So just look at them and sigh. I'm like, all right, great. We're going to talk music.
Right.
And so I said something about David. And they're like, huh? What? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, the kid. I'm like, the kid what? They're like, what are you talking? Like, are you being funny? And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And then Dave White, he's like, don't say anything. Let's just move past this.
You're in Canada.
Type of thing. And I'm like, for our American and Italian listeners, they might not know what we're talking about. So this might be a weird story. But picture superstar, sports guy.
Oh, I'll tell you, any of our sports listeners will know who you're talking about because he plays for the Pittsburgh Penguins and he's in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay, these things I don't know.
That's fine.
Clearly. So I come home and I tell Faith, and I'm like, okay, just, she's like never on the internet.
Right.
Like I have to remind her to check her emails and go on Facebook. We don't have cable. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're above it or anything like that. We just don't.
Sure.
And we recently got a TV after 8 years of marriage.
Nice. Good job.
Our brother Jason was moving. He's going to take it to the dump. And I'm like, does it work? He's like, yeah. So we have it now. And I mentioned this to her. And she's like, yeah, Sidney Crosby. I'm like, hockey? She's like, yeah. I'm like, you know who that is? And she's like, yeah, everybody does.
True. But to be fair, I know who Crosby, Stills, and Nash. So I'm in both parties, Ruben. I knew what you were referring to.
Yeah.
And I knew what you're lost on.
Yeah, anyways, and so...
Yeah, if Sidney Crosby sang with the Sidney Crosby, Stills, and Nash, that might be interesting. It definitely would add a little bit of youth to that trio or quartet.
It would. Dan Crosby is the opposite of health, the epitome of what health is.
Didn't he donate his
sperm
to Melissa Etheridge?
Yeah. Brad Pitt was the other contender. I forget why that didn't go through. I literally just read about it.
In an interview with Australia Studio 10 talk show, Melissa Etheridge confessed that she and her then-partner, Julie Cypher, had considered Brad Pitt as a sperm donor for their children. The couple wound up choosing Crosby, Stills, and Nash member David Crosby, despite the fact that Etheridge was good friends with Pitt at the time. The couple chose Crosby for several reasons, particularly because he had children of his own already, whereas Pitt did not. Etheridge joked that now her teenagers will say, I could have had Brad Pitt as my dad. And her son will say, I could have been amazingly handsome.
Because David Crosby was going to be at Victoria recently, and I really wanted to see him, but then I realized wanted the money more than seeing him.
Has Crosby, the singer,
yes,
has he ever been young? Yeah, he seems like he's always been 75.
Yeah. Well, I think his twin brother is the oatmeal guy.
Yeah.
Diabetes guy, too, as well.
Oh, he has diabetes and oatmeal.
Yeah.
Anyways, interesting. Yeah, well, yeah.
Interesting enough, oatmeal is supposed to lower your risk of diabetes.
Why are you saying it like that?
Because that's how he says it in the commercials. Diabetes. Diabetes.
Oh, I really hope we can find an audio file of that because...
Oh, we will.
Okay.
We will. Stand by. Listen. One, two, three.
I'm Wilfred Brimley, and I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes about diabetes. Diabetes. Now, one of the things I've learned to do is laugh at myself. Kind of loosen up. Kind of relax about the whole thing. Diabetes.
There you have it. He said diabetes. You can't beat cancer, but you can diabetes. All right. Well, actually, you did beat cancer, or you're a cancer survivor.
I am a cancer survivor.
Still?
I better be.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a joke. You're still here. We're glad you're here.
Thanks, guys. There's probably like some listener out there that's like,
Well, so episode 9.
Episode 9, yeah.
This is exciting. So thank you very much to our fans who have gone through every episode and got to episode 9. We do know that there are those who've jumped midship, and that's wonderful. I mean, as the episodes progress, we'll get those people who are like, I just want to listen to what they've done so far or the last few weeks. We welcome you. Welcome to the Going the Distance podcast. To those who've started since day one, we salute you.
Yeah, you can just go on iTunes or Google Play and just type in Going the Distance podcast and you'll see the us photoshopped as Rocky and Drago and click subscribe.
Yes, please subscribe.
And automatically it will subscribe on your device or phone or whatever.
And don't forget to give us a 5-star review, or if we're only worthy of a 3-star, we'll take 3 as well. If you want to give us 1-star, actually, I would like to hear that too, because those are kind of fun to read, actually. Yeah, thanks, guys, for listening to us. So let's talk about why we're here today. Why are we here?
Mike.
Kunda.
Mike Kunda.
Kunda.
That's a great name.
It's a wonderful name. You know
what? It sounds like a fighter.
In this corner, we got Mike Kunda.
I think it has a tribal type of vibe.
It's that double digit. Mike Tyson, Mike Kunda.
Yeah, yeah.
You need Apollo Creed. Yeah. You know, you got those
2 syllables.
Yeah, the punches. two or one syllable.
You got the hard consonant in there. And great name, Mike.
Great name, Mike. And speaking of Mike, Mike's a great name too. In our family, from my dad down to his 4 sons and their sons' kids, one of us in our family each have the middle name Michael. So Mike's a great name in our family as well. So Mike Kunda. So
Okay, let's just settle this.
Okay. My apologies. Okay, so we'll be very quick. We don't want to bore the listeners with our family tree. But Ruben, go ahead and explain that. Yes, everybody.
Okay, so my dad's middle name is Michael after his father.
Yes,
and then our brother middle name Michael, and then some nephews or I guess for you, your kids. Or one of your kids, right?
Yeah, so each brother has a son.
Yeah.
Whose middle name is Michael.
So anyways, I don't have any sons, but I have daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, prior to the second daughter being born, I was looking at the genealogy, and I couldn't find our grandpa's death certificate. And so I looked at his gravestone picture, and it said Mike on it, not Michael. I'm like, okay, that's interesting.
Right.
Turns out, he was never Michael.
That's awesome.
So everybody has been naming their kids Michael after somebody who was Mike.
That's awesome.
And he wasn't even born Mike. He was born Misha, because he's Russian.
True. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So, anyways, just a little tidbit.
That's awesome. That's actually a part of family history that I was not aware. I was under the wrong impression that Mike was short for Michael for our grandfather, but it turns out that was just his name, the English version of Misha.
Yeah. Which I named my daughter.
Yes. So you're the only one who correctly named their child.
You know, all I can do things right. I see my brothers and I see their screw ups and I just do it right.
Well, there you go. I'm glad that's the benefit of being the youngest, I guess. You get to not make the mistakes that we made.
Yeah, clearly. I have life, you know, completely by the horns.
Good.
Okay, go on. So Mike Kunda. Sorry we talked about our family there, but Mike Kunda, first of all, thanks for talking, Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mike. Really appreciate it. And let me tell you a little history on Mike and how I came to come in contact with him. When Ruben and I started this podcast, again, we've said it before, we're under no grand illusion that we're going to reach anybody. I find it amazing that anybody would even take time out of their day, busy schedule that we all have, to talk to us, somebody who they've never met, and we don't have any clout whatsoever. And so we've had a couple interviews now, Mike being the second one. Last episode, we had Ben Fiore. Mm-hmm. This week, we have Mike Kunda. And these guys have been very gracious and kind, saying, you know what? Hey, well, I'll talk to you. And not only have they talked to us, but they gave us great insight to their life, to what Rocky has meant to them. And in Mike's case, in particular, he has a fascinating story about what Rocky has basically done for him for his whole life and what he does on a daily basis. So the interview will explain all that. He's got an interesting life. You're really going to enjoy what you're going to hear here, guys.
Enough jibber-jabber. Let's hear it.
No more jibber-jabber. Let me just give a preface really quick.
Okay, more jibber-jabber.
Cut out the jibber-jabber. Don't be babbling like a fool. Say what you got to say. That's all. Then shut your dang pow-hole.
More jibber-jabber. You'll hear the interview right away that I tell Mike that I had the flu, and I really did. That morning I woke up, I was sick. Very, very sick. I did not want to lose this interview.
What type of flu? Like, what was it? Like a diarrhea?
No, it wasn't diarrhea, thankfully.
Throwing up,
that type. You know, it's hard to talk. It's hard to sit comfortably because you got the stomach pains. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I've got to have this interview with Mike. I got to go the distance. I got to go keep moving forward. No matter how hard this flu hits, you got to keep moving forward.
You're an inspiration.
Thank you.
Last week, some people were probably impressed. I'm a cancer survivor.
You're a cancer survivor. But Ruben, listen.
But this tops it off. But go on.
Yeah, I had the flu.
You had the flu. Go on.
But what I want to say is that I was nervous about losing this opportunity to get Mike again. So we had time scheduled. I didn't want to lose that. If it sounds like I'm monotone and or maybe I'm just hearing it, but I sound like a little bit monotone and disinterested, I'm really not. It's near the end of the interview. I'm so exhausted and so ready to puke.
You're in the 15th round.
Yeah, I'm in the 15th round. But Mike, he was patient. He was awesome. He was engaging. So anyways, people aren't listening for me. They're listening for Mike. Here we go. Roll the tape.
Stay on the line while your call is completed. Long distance charges may apply.
Hey, there he is.
Hey, Mike, yo, what's up?
Yo. How's your day going?
Well, if I could be honest with you, I almost canceled, but I don't cancel on Mike, you know, because I'm coming down with a flu or something. My body's aching and everything. I feel like I just went 15 rounds with the champ.
I got to tell you something. The last 2.5 days, I've had the flu myself, head cold, coughing, body aches. It's funny. My wife says it's going around.
It must be. I think for me, it's something I ate. I could be wrong. It's leveling me. I'm doing the old fighting off the vomiting as much as I can. I don't want to do that. I hate doing that.
Well, listen, I am very, very cool. If we need to reschedule, I'm more than happy to comply. I have no problem, buddy.
Well, you're a good man, but we're gonna. What's the old saying here? We're gonna take
man up, cowboy up,
cowboy up. Pull up our skirts there, and let's do this.
All right. I'm excited.
Now, for the listeners out there, Mike, how do you pronounce your last name?
It's Kunda. Kunda with force.
Kunda.
Mike Kunda.
I like it. So, what's the background on that last name?
Long story short, it's a Ukrainian last name, Slovak Ukrainian. My father's, he's half Italian and half Ukraine.
Well, we got something in common. Besides our love of Rocky. My last name is Ukrainian as well.
How about that?
There you go. I knew we had a connection. I knew it was something other than just Rocky.
You know what? Our people probably came over on the boat at the same time.
Mine went a little bit north, though. Or maybe yours went south.
I know. You guys probably came from the colder part and kind of settled in Canada only because, you know, that's probably where I would have liked to have gone. You know, had I not seen Rocky at a very young age, I probably would have moved north to like a horse farm on the coast or something.
It's interesting how life works that way, the little choices we make and where we end up because of them.
I know. It's truly amazing, the influences that come over us and put us down path A. And then you go down path A, and then you take path B off path A, and then path C off path B. It's quite remarkable.
It is. And, Mike, I've already explained in the who you are and why we're talking to you. And
okay.
Yeah, so what we'll do is, you do the tours right now for the Rocky locations and what have you, but to get there, how did you get there?
How did I get there? Well, that's a very long, complicated story. I'll try to give an abbreviated version of it.
We got time, but yeah, I understand. I want to say, and tell me if I'm wrong there, Mike, you can actually get the details of the story in your and your life story in a book that you've written, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And Cue the Rocky Music was a book that I chose to write in 2008 when I got fired from a job with corporate America. I was doing very well there, but when the American economy hit the skids, you know, those making a little bit better salary were going to be the first to go. And when I got fired, I wanted it to count for something. I didn't just want to sit back and do nothing. So all the times I had with my, that I spent with Stallone, I never really thanked him in a way I felt was appropriate. So I thought, let me write him a letter. And then after I wrote one story after another and another, I had a couple of chapters, and my mother said, you ought to write a book. And I promptly laughed at her because I just thought, guys like me do not write books. We stand on them to get stuff off the top shelf. So
let me say, your reading prowess before this was not very high, or you didn't read a lot of books?
No. Before this, I enjoy reading. I really do, but I was a poor student in school. I escaped high school with a D minus. You know, I really was not one to turn a page to write. That was my whole thing. I enjoyed reading, but not writing so much. So started writing for about 2 years, and got the book done. It eventually made its way to Sylvester Stallone, which was very cool.
That is really cool. And in fact, I was going to ask you first, how did it feel to accomplish that, just to accomplish writing a book? Not everyone can say they've done that.
Well, you know what? You're right. And it really the book itself is basically about practice in timing. When you have time, what do you do with that time? Do you sit on the couch eating bonbons, watching Judge Judy, or do you put yourself to a task? Do you try to do something? That's basically, the book is told through wanting to become a Rocky, the eyes of wanting to become a Rocky impersonator, but not knowing where to start. But yet for years, impersonating Rocky just around the house with friends, going to school, whatever, it was building, building, building. And then when you get an opportunity that I had, such as a national lookalike contest in Philadelphia, you're kind of prepared for it. And I show through a bunch of short stories how if you just keep trying and you don't run away from the things that you fear, stick through, even though you're going to fail. You know you're going to fail. You know there's no way you're going to accomplish your goal, but the important thing is to stick with it. Because if you run at every hard moment, you're always going to run. You know, you're always going to be looking in the rearview mirror of life saying, what if I only tried? So that's basically what the book is about.
That's awesome. And I do plan on buying it, and people can find it on Amazon. And I believe it's both in softcover and ebook, correct?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, hard, soft, and e.
That's awesome. Can people get a signed copy from you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I certainly, they can always contact me. I sell them too. I have them at the house, so if somebody wants a signed copy, they can send the money to my PayPal, and I'll be happy to sign it, personalize it, and get it right out to them. I got no problems with that.
That's awesome. I guess you can't sign the ebook version.
Well, I tried electronically to sign it with E, and it just didn't work out. I ended up shutting down the system. It was a whole night. I don't know.
you went in the system like Tron.
Yeah, exactly. They put me in like a little Italian motorcycle, and I'm going around the lit highways like in Tron, trying to kind of find a book and sign it.
That would be an awesome video game, mixing Tron and Rocky. We'll get on top of that and talk to some developers.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that could seriously work. Like have giant boxing gloves and have like Clubber Lang pop out, like Clubber Lang helmets. It would be awesome.
Now, you have an interesting experience about the first time you saw Rocky, what it meant to you the first time you saw or heard of Rocky.
In 1976, I was like 8 years old, so I never saw Rocky in the theater, but I saw it for the first time in television in 1979. You know, I, like many other kids, I had problems in the schoolyard with bullies, and I wasn't much of a fighter. So my father did his best to kind of show me how to throw a few deadly punches, you know. He said, you know, Rocky's going to be on TV. It's a boxing movie.
Okay.
You want to, you know, maybe take a look at it. And I said, yeah, okay, maybe I'll pick up a few things. So I set my recorder up. I used to record television shows, like the Three Stooges or the $6 Million Man or what have you. So I recorded it on an audio cassette, and I would then play it back over and over and over, mimicking and learning the lines. So when I watched it, when those big white letters came across the screen and Bill Conti's Fanfare for Rocky plays, forget about it. I mean, it just blew me away. Literally, I could feel like my DNA changing. You could feel like the musical clef notes just kind of coursing through my veins from my heart. And I know that sounds cheesy and corny, but that is the best way I can describe of what that meant. It was like lightning bolts from Frankenstein. I mean, it was unbelievable how it changed me.
Well, you've got an excellent way of words and describing, and it's not cheesy because I don't think it's as special as it was for you. You're not alone. I mean, that's what the Rocky franchise has done for millions of people.
Well, I have to tell you, that's exactly what I'm finding out by doing my tours. You know, we get people from around the world that come to take my tours in Philly, and they tell me the same thing. And we have grown men who are lumberjacks in certain countries. We have men who are like bodybuilders. We have just men, they're built like mountains. And when they come to the Rocky sites, they actually weep. They actually get so unbelievably emotional. Like, I have this one guy. He has a full-time job. He's from Chicago. He's also a Randy Macho Man Savage impersonator.
Oh.
And he got so emotional when we were on at the end of Rocky Street, 1818 Tusculum from the first movie. And it was a beautiful thing to see that reaction come out in a full-grown man who, you know, I mean, he was there with his family. They showed amazing support for him. It was one of the most beautiful moments that you could experience. And if you're an average Rocky fan, if anyone's listening to this and they really are not, they're like, oh my God, what a bunch of wackos. Maybe we are a little wacky, but I'll tell you what, the people I meet have the biggest hearts and they do so much with their time and for charities and whatnot. And it's a beautiful thing.
That is a very interesting thing that you brought up. One very good story, very touching, and I would probably be one of those weeping, though I'm not a lumberjack, you would probably look at me and say, yeah, look at that girly boy cry, it makes sense. I would definitely get teared up. Like you and like many, many others, I've grown up with Rocky in my heart, my soul, and on the screen, and it's just, it has meant so much to me. It is like a religious experience because it touches your heart and it touches your soul. And I've cried in every movie. There's a moment in every movie that makes my eyes well up.
Yeah, you're everybody does. Because again, for me, it was at a time that it was the building blocks of my emotional mental foundation when I was a young boy that went into those formative years. I have the high emotions and when I saw what was put together by not just Stallone, but the director, John Avildsen, and Talia Shire, and Burt Young, and Carl, and Burgess, and all that, and everyone. So, you know, it was definitely a group effort, much like Rocky came to be a group effort. That's how I view life. You know, none of us are an island. We cannot accomplish things on our own. We tend to work better together as a team. And that's the thing. I mean, I couldn't do any of the things that I do if it wasn't for my wife. I mean, you know, Rocky, as a Rocky impersonator, I don't get sick days, I don't get benefits. My wife gets that, and she also has a very stable, good job that allows me to pick up and go for my gigs and my tours. Again, it's one thing to hold fast to your dreams, but can you make a living at it?
Well, that's cool that you get to wake up in the morning and do what you love. I mean, that's what it comes down to it. I mean, there's people who probably sell hot dogs at the corner of the street, and they wake up happy doing what they love.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Whatever it is, trying to find something where you can acquire a paycheck and find peace. Go to bed, put your head on the pillow and say, I did good today. And that for me is what it's all about.
That's awesome. I have a family, a large family, about six kids. Well, about six kids. I do have six kids. I don't have to round up. For me, my job is just, I admit, Mike, it's just to pay the bills, but to do the things I want to do with my family. So the job is a means to an end. To do that which I love, which is being with the family. So that's kind of how I make make peace with the fact that I'm not doing my dream job, but I do have to take care of the family.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And what you're doing, you're passing out, you're giving kids, whatever, you're giving everyone a chance to go and go further. You know, the next generation is always, you want them to do better than you did. And that's like the ultimate victory. And that's one of the things my father always told me. You know, he was a tailor for 47 years, and his biggest goal was that we all do better than he and my mother did.
Absolutely.
I think that's a great view for parents to have. I really do.
And we do the same thing with our kids. We just tell them, hey, just be better than us, and we'll be happy. Which I guess We probably set the bar pretty low, but they should be fine. So now that we're talking about a touching story about the tour, is there any funny or embarrassing stories that have happened?
Oh, God, there's so many. Sometimes they blend together. Sometimes I forget them. I've had a couple of guys come out from Long Island one time. I know the Rocky Steps are unique set of steps because they are a little bit deeper than you would think they were. And in the movie, Stallone, especially near the top, he starts taking them three at a time.
Right.
And it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. I mean, if you're in decent shape, sure, no problem. But, you know, the thing about steps is that they're vertical. So gravity's involved here, and there's 72 steps. So I told the guy, I said, listen, the steps can be deceiving. You've got to watch it. I said, it's easy to trip. These guys are macho guys, and they had their girls with them. I was like, okay, whatever. I'm just like calmly walking up on the side because I've run them about a billion times. And about halfway up or so, the guy trips face first right into the landing above the steps and busts his nose. And I started laughing to myself. And if he hears this, he's probably going to say, you son of a gun, you. But I did tell him, I did warn him, and everybody was kind of laughing at him. He shook it off and did his little Rocky dance. That's kind of funny.
Should have told him that his broken nose was an improvement.
I know. That's an improvement. But to see, yeah, there's always, I think the most beautiful thing is just watching the look on their faces when you turn the corner from the Rocky statue, because we usually go take a picture of the Rocky statue, and there's maybe a 60, 70 foot walk from the statue to the base of the steps, and it's blocked out by a bit of, it's not a straight on view. So as you come around the corner, you see the steps there laid out, and most times you see 100 or 200, 300 people running the steps, and they're in their glory right before you, and you see the look on their face.
That's incredible.
And it is. You see, it's like it's like a drug.
Right.
You know, I can only see Rocky for the first time once, so I'm always chasing it through the eyes of others. When I bring someone there and they're seeing it for the first time, I get that high that I got off of seeing Rocky the very first time. That's another reason why I do it. The recharging factor is like times 10 for me.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm the same about Rocky. I can only see it once for the first time. I always show it to loved ones or friends or family, anyone that I feel will accept this gift I'm giving them that they haven't seen this movie yet. Because I treat it almost like a sacred experience. I don't like to cast my pearls before swine to give it to anybody.
That is very, very, very true. I agree.
Because you don't want to sit there in a viewing like, oh, look at that guy. And you're like, okay, this is not the viewing experience I want to experience. You go away.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you know, there are people who will watch it and they'll poke fun at Stallone. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I understand why. I'm not that type of guy. Like, I would rather not waste my time with a movie I have no interest in.
Right, of course. And so far, my success rate for people to watch this movie with is pretty high. Like, anyone that hasn't seen it, I try not to oversell it, even though I've been a fan for life. I just say, oh, it's a good movie about, you know, about boxing, a little bit of love story, a little bit of drama. You might like it. And I just showed my 16-year-old niece the movie for the first time. She'd never seen it before. And I asked her what she knew about the movie. And all she knew was about a guy who fights. And I thought that was great because it's in the culture, but doesn't mean everyone knows everything about it. I also wanted to see what a current 16-year-old teenager of today's day and age would think of this movie. It's 40 years old, and lo and behold, she loved it.
Well, that's good to hear.
Well, yeah, she's my brother's daughter, so she can still stay in the family.
Now, how old is she?
16.
You see, this is the thing that amazes me. The last year and a half, I've gotten what seems to be a huge amount of kids. Their families find me online, and they say, you know, my 9-year-old daughter is a massive Rocky 1 fan. And I'm like, excuse me? What? How? Why? I don't understand that. It makes no sense.
It's a flashy one, so to speak. It's kind of the one that's the heaviest on drama, and it's not as flashy as, say, 3 and 4.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's a much slower paced drama. So I say, you know, what is it about it? And they say that they get it. They get Rocky's lonely factor. They get that he doesn't have a lot of confidence at first, but Adrian brings it up. Like the kids are explaining this to me once we get them on the tour. It's the most amazing thing in the world. I'm blown away. I come home and tell my wife about it. The kids really blow me away every time I get them on the tours. I mean, they are so, they know minute details. Like, it's not the parents just blowing smoke saying, oh, my kid's a big Rocky fan. But these kids are seriously adept at Rocky knowledge.
That's awesome. Well, quality doesn't diminish over time. It might strengthen over time.
Right. And, exactly.
And I suspect Rocky will be talked about on some future podcast 100 years from now.
Well, listen, let me ask you this. No secret by now, everybody knows Sylvester Stallone did not win the Oscar. Do you remember the actor's name who beat him for it?
Yeah, we actually mentioned this on our first podcast, I believe. And I, now that you're asking me, I forget. I think it was somebody for the network.
The point is, it doesn't matter. Yeah, Mark Reliance was his name. I happen to know it because
was the last one for Creed. You're talking about for Creed.
Yeah.
Again, I forgot his name. I know the movie was Bridge of Spies, but again, yeah, he was robbed twice, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, Peter Finch, I think, for Network. Yeah, for Rocky One. But yeah, for Creed, no one is going to remember Mark Reliance.
No.
I'm going to remember it because I am a massive Sick fan. So, of course, I'm going to remember that name to the day I die because Stallone lost an Oscar to it. But the average person, you give them two names. Who's Mark Reliance and who's Rocky Balboa?
Right.
Excuse me, but I think we know the one that's going to be remembered for all time. All right.
And shame on the Academy for not acknowledging the Rocky character that has – the fact that he was nominated twice for the same role, a role that he created. I mean, who's done that, Mike? Who has created a character that they created and wrote scripts for that have been nominated for an Oscar twice for?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. And a lot of people pointed out Stallone didn't get the Oscar for Rocky this time because it wasn't a life achievement thing. And so I understand that. I do. I get it. I mean, personally, I believe Stallone won. He hands down the Oscar. I believe his performance was superior to Mark Reliance's. I saw his in Bridge of Spies, and it wasn't bad, but it was extremely brief. No one has done what Sylvester Stallone has done. What you just mentioned, and the fact that Sylvester Stallone has created three, basically...
franchises.
Film series. Franchises, yeah. You know, you got Rocky, Rambo, and The Expendables. Now, I know Sylvester did not create Rambo. I mean, I know David Morrell did. David Morrell did an incredible job.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sylvester took it to the next level, and he really, you know, he recognized
it. Yeah, he made it his own. No one else could have done it again with the Rambo character. Yeah. Great book, by the way. Have you read the First Blood book?
Many, many, many times. I love it. It's amazing. I mean, that first book takes place in Kentucky. It doesn't take place in Hope, British Columbia, which is something I found very interesting. And, you know, there's a lot of differences in the book. We learn more about Diesel, all that stuff.
Yeah, he dies in the end. Spoiler alert.
Absolutely. Yeah, he dies. And again, poetically, it's probably the right ending, you know, to kill Frankenstein, the Frankenstein monster. So it's probably the more accurate ending. But, you know, we wouldn't have had 37 sequels had he done it.
Well, I believe they filmed the ending of him dying, and when they tested it for screen audiences, and after his success in Rocky, the screen audiences were very sour to see Stallone die on screen.
Well, not only that, but it was a crappy kill scene too.
Right.
It was just lousy. It was not filmed well.
Oh.
And I wonder if that had more to do with it than anything.
That might have been it too. I didn't know about the quality of the shoot there.
Yeah, I've watched it over and over and over, and it's just not. I don't know. I think it's a lower quality. It's just not. Stallone was. He didn't seem to be as that good acting at doing the death scene or whatever. The scene that we got was perfection. And I don't mean to pick on Stallone at all. I'm just saying, you know, I don't know that it just. I think there's a few reasons why that scene it didn't see the light of day.
Oh, fair enough. Now back to the tour and your impersonation of Rocky. How does one like yourself embody the heart and soul of Rocky? What do you do to kind of step into that character? And before you answer that question, I just want to say to the listeners, people might think, is this guy a wacko? You know, is this guy crazy for being a Rocky impersonator? Then I thought, well, no, there's a little bit, but there's people on TV, people that go on Ice Capade tours, like Disney's on Ice, and people dress people dress up and act the character role for audiences all around the world. So in its own way,
Las Vegas Elvis impersonators—they make livings off of this.
Of course,
big livings.
And I think Rocky, and we know we've already touched on it, how many lives he has touched and moved and inspired. Why not Rocky? Why not have a Rocky character that can be done and done as well as you do? So how do you?
Well,
I believe it's done as well as you do. I
Yeah.
Before you answer that question, explain the lookalike contest, and then maybe describe how does one prepare to be like Rocky?
So for the lookalike contest, I didn't even enter it myself. I didn't think I looked anything like Rocky that I should compete. I was probably 10 or 15 pounds overweight, and I had short, buzzed haircut because I was with corporate America. And friends of mine, I'd already been on the set of Rocky Balboa. This was in 2006.
Now, are you on the DVD extras?
No. I am not. I am not. I was there during filming. I got to watch it, and Frank Stallone was taking a lot of video behind the scenes, okay. And I got on a lot of that video, but a very minute portion of that video made it to the behind the scenes of the Rocky Balboa documentaries. So I'm very sad to admit.
When I reached out to you online, I feel like I've seen you before on TV or some sort of extra scene or something. So maybe that's what it was.
Maybe on the wall at the International Post Office. I don't know. My friends at the Victor Cafe, a lovely woman at the time was the manager. Her name was Rhea. And a friend of mine who was like a handyman there, his name was Steve. They entered my picture into the Rocky Lookalike contest that was being sponsored by the local newspaper there. And it was pretty big. It was about 1,000 people that entered. I made it all the way through to the top 5 Rocky lookalikes and the top 5 Adrian lookalikes. And there's a park in Center City, Philly called Love Park. That's where the event was held. We were in the basement with 4 other Rockies as the Adrians were out on stage competing. Some of us were in the sweat. Some of us were in the gray, the black hat and leather coat and whatnot. It was a very bizarre, surreal experience. My wife was out in the crowd filming. Stallone was going to be in town the very next day. To rededicate the Rocky statue. Just trying to give you an overview of what's going on here.
Right, right. A lot of buzz in the air.
Yes, there was quite a lot. I didn't prepare. There was nothing I really prepared, and I just said it's so ridiculous to think of myself. I mean, I used to dress like Rocky going to high school. I used to walk around my neighborhood with the old black hat that my grandfather gave me and black leather jacket. So, you know, it was a very bizarre young life for me. So I thought, how am I going to make it through this contest? So they simply asked us a bunch of questions. Most of the guys, they didn't think they were Rocky. Like the one question was asked, hey, Rocky, what did you have for breakfast this morning? So the obvious answer would be 5 raw eggs, right?
Right.
Well, the guy says, no, you know, I had some oatmeal and I had a glass of orange juice. No, you're supposed to be Rocky. What does Rocky have for breakfast? And see, the guy wasn't getting it. And then they had us, like, react scenes from the movie or say lines or whatever. So, you know, none of the guys were really getting it. But the biggest thing was nobody was playing to the audience. And so that's what I did. I just, when they called me up on stage, I grabbed the mic and I just started making fun of the judges. I started talking to the audience. I did a compiling of Don Rickles, Rocky Balboa, myself, and maybe what Rocky might say, and I put it into a mental blender. Whatever came out is whatever came out. Yeah, and it seemed to work. I had to redo the scene, the Gazzo scene in the church. Condominiums, you know, totally, I never used them. You know, we had to do that, and I had to do a couple little bit of trivia they gave us.
Do you remember any of the trivia?
What did Rocky take home after taxes from the first fight? And I believe it was 37 grand.
Right, that's right. It was crazy. Yeah. Loss, money-wise.
Yeah, taxes kill you. Yeah, they murder you, you know. But
he had to buy,
so anyway, that all kind of,
buy that gold watch and that silly yeah. jacket with the tiger on it.
I know. It goes fast when you start splurging. it goes very fast. But so that was basically the contest. The judges were local celebrities. Beasley Reese was an ex-New York Giant. They had a couple of news personalities there. And, you know, nothing worth bragging about, but it certainly was a contest. I thought for sure there would have been 10 guys who looked more like Rocky, sounded more like Rocky, were built more like Rocky, would have entered. But you know what? If they were out there for whatever reasons, the guys who should have won this didn't enter. I did. My friends entered me. I won it. The prize was in a few months when Rocky Balboa had a red carpet premiere in Philadelphia. I got to go to the red carpet. I got to bring my wife, walk the red carpet, and I sat with Burt Young and Milo Ventimiglia and Geraldine Hughes. A lot of the people that were in the movie, I got to spend more time with Stallone, which was great. I mean, watching a Rocky movie with all the major players right in front of you, that's pretty big in a Rocky fan's life.
Oh my goodness. I mean, you're preaching to the choir, brother. I mean, that's yes. I mean, the people that you've met and talked to, I dream about. So we salute you.
Oh, thank you. And really that's how it all kind of was incubating for a very long time. But before that, I was lucky enough to sit literally elbow to elbow next to Sylvester Stallone on his birthday, his 60th birthday, at the Victor Cafe. He went out to get some air, and my friend Rhea, who she was the manager at the time, she brought me out and reintroduced me and Stallone, and then she left the two of us there talking, and we had this really great talk for quite some time.
That's awesome.
And, and Stallone was doing his favorite Rocky lines, and I'm doing my favorite Rocky lines. You know, my wife is on the other side of the window at our table looking at the two of us, like, shoulder to shoulder, mimicking and imitating Rocky. Like, it was just so surreal.
Oh,
so,
I can imagine. Did you do better Rocky than he did?
No, the man won it, hands down. I mean, I was concerned with not having any of the white stuff in the corner of my mouth or spitting on him while I was talking. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's what happens when you're in conversation. You know, you get the little flecks that fly off. I was just like, God, don't hit him in the corner of the cheek or something, you know?
What was one of his favorite lines that you recall?
You know, it was interesting because I remember he had said something about, "Yo, Paulie, your sister's with me," to that one. And, of course, he's like, I don't even know if this was so much a favorite line as much as he was at the particular moment thinking of Butkus. And he was like, "Yo, Butkus," you know, it was like one of those types of deals, you know? It was a very... back and forth, and so my wife comes out, she takes a picture, and she goes back inside. So I says, he goes, "You know, you do look like me, you know, 25 years ago or 30 years ago." He goes, "You should do something with that." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? Like, you know, Sly, you're Rocky. I'm not a boxer or anything." He goes, "No." He goes, "You get a black hat, leather coat, weddings, bar mitzvahs, charge a couple of bucks." He goes, "You know, people love that." And I was like, "Oh, like an Elvis impersonator," and he started laughing. And then, you know, we went back in, and the whole restaurant sang happy birthday to him. But the whole time, I'm thinking, "Wow, this is an interesting thing." But you know, I let it go. And then
you missed a great opportunity when he told you to do that. You should have said, "I can't do that. I'm just a ham and egger."
It's just a ham and egger. That's true. Where were you to give me all these great lines?
Well, I have the luxury of looking back at the story. You were in it. I'm sure you were just. Yeah. I can only imagine the fact that you could have a conversation without bending at the knees and collapsing to the floor is pretty impressive.
Have you ever seen the news footage when the Beatles landed at Chase Stadium in 1962 or 63?
Yeah.
The girls are all fainting?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what was going on in my mind.
Don't faint.
Play it cool, because that's the one thing I will tell you. Stallone hates when people gush. And that's the one thing, really, that his bodyguard told me, Gary. He said, "You know, if you ever get the chance to have a expanded conversation, don't gush. He hates that. You know, "Oh my God, I saw you when you jumped out of that tree and you sewed up your arm. What was that like? You know, Rambo." Like, don't go crazy. Just have a normal conversation. And he'll talk to you forever if time allows. I mean, his people literally were pulling him away from having normal conversations, and not only with me, but with other people.
I dream of the day I could ever have a conversation with him, but I'll definitely keep that to heart.
Yeah, well, it's the truth, so it'll serve you well.
Now, has anyone ever accidentally thought you were Sylvester Stallone, and then if they did, you played along?
Well, yeah, it's funny, because when I do the tours, when I get all dressed up, right, and, you know, I look really accurate, and you're up in Kensington, and you're out front of the pet shop or out front of Mickey's gym, people start honking the horns, they get out of the car, cable installers come over, the cops come over, locals come over, and from about 20 feet away, there is a better than average resemblance. But as they get closer, they see, "Aw, you ain't him."
Uh-huh.
That's a guy that kind of whatever resembles him. Most times, they're really like, "Man, I thought you was him from across the street." And so it's kind of funny. And I usually play along. I'm like, "No, I'm Rocky's younger brother, Schlocky." And so, you know, you just do funny things like that. But really, you take a couple pictures. It was funny because just about a week ago, we were driving in front of Rocky's apartment from the first movie. Five kids, they were like, ranged from like 10 to 13. And they were like, he's here, it's him, it's him. And they all got dollar bills, so I just put Rocky in quotes and just said, I don't know that they thought I was Stallone, but, whatever.
Yeah, they love, well, it's the character. They get caught up. Even though I'm an adult and when I'm at Disneyland and I spotted Mickey Mouse, I get a picture with Mickey Mouse. I know there's somebody under there, but it's still a magical moment to be next to Mickey.
Exactly. You know, it's a lot of fun, and I love seeing people's face light up. But then they start telling you Rocky-related stories. You know, they start telling you because they lived in the neighborhood, and they were there when filming was happening over 40 years.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. They start telling you. It's like a time machine. You know, all because I'm wearing this stupid costume that resembles Rocky's. People, they come over to you. It breaks down the social barrier, and then they're like, you know, I was here back in 1978, and when they were filming, they did this, and they did that, and they would Mickey's poster. And so it's very interesting. And then I take those stories, and I pass those stories on to the people on my tours. And they can't get these stories from anybody else because nobody goes to the lengths that I do to dress up like Rocky to inspire people to start talking to me. Right. You know?
That's incredible. The wealth of stories that you have in your head and the experience, that really is incredible. You should probably be doing this podcast. My gosh, listeners are going to be like, why don't we have this guy on every day? Why you two bums doing it? Me and my brother.
Yeah, well, you guys, listen, I was listening to some of the first one just earlier this morning. I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but it really sounds good, and you're having a lot of fun with it, and I think people are going to like that.
Oh, I appreciate
you know, it's,
that.
When you're driving, when you do a lot of driving, if you have a particular subject that you like, it's nice to hear other people chat about it. So, well, if you can't be interactive about it, you can at least listen to people going at it, and I like that. You know, there's a few podcasts that I've done that with, and it's very interesting, very interesting.
Well, thanks, Mike. I do appreciate that plug. Who have you yet to meet that you would like to from the cast or crew?
Such a shame I couldn't meet Burgess Meredith. That's a shame. I might be taking a trip out to California in a little while, and I'm really hoping somehow to run into Talia Shire. She is such a huge part, obviously, the Rocky phenomenon. I would like to sit with her and let her know how she's inspired me as well, you know, as being just a great role model, not only for women, but just for people who want to be a better human. I think she's a good role model for that.
She's excellent, and through no fault of her own, the Rocky character sometimes overshadows hers. But without Adrian, we wouldn't have Rocky if who he is, and his character wouldn't be what it is.
Well, you see, this is exactly what I'm thinking. What she represented in that movie, going back to what I said a little while ago, I don't know anyone who does it alone, who's truly self-made, because usually you have some outside help somewhere, whether it's a husband or a wife who supports you, or friends who will help, even if it's emotional support, because without that emotional support, trust me, you're going to go nowhere fast. I've had more rejection. I've had more lost opportunity than I can count. You know, I know how much my wife has helped me stay true and focused to what it is I want to accomplish. You know, that's just every bit as important as me driving back and forth an hour and a half to Philadelphia to do my gigs and do the shtick and, you know, keep putting it all together.
That's awesome. It's
important.
Well, we're going to close up here soon, but before we go, we're covering Rocky One in our podcast. We're going in order of the movies, and we're almost done recording the episodes that deal with Rocky One. But I want to ask,
Nice. It's
a great one to talk about, and I want to ask you, what's your favorite moment or scene in the movie that when you see it, it either chokes you up or raises your spirit more than any other?
14th round, when Apollo is knocking Rocky around the ring and Rock's fading. He's got nothing. He's already tapped his reserve tanks. And the music, Going the Distance, which is a song I know you know,
you're in my head right now.
Exactly. It's playing, and the crowd's going nuts. And, you know, at this point, we're so invested in Rocky's future. We're just like, oh, God, he's going to go down, but don't go down. That's all he wanted to do is be standing to start the 15th round. That's all he wanted. And when he goes down, and Mickey, who can no longer take it, he cannot take it. He does not want to see his fighter in any more pain. Rocky's already proven he was no bum.
Right.
But Mike is yelling in the corner, get up, get on your feet. And the music's going, and Rocky's climbing the ropes. And then he stands up, and Apollo can't believe it, and Rocky waves him in. and he crushes his ribs with those uppercuts. Oh, my God. There is no scene in the world that gets me more motivated than when I put that on. It's incredible. And it has nothing to do, you know, Stallone doesn't have the 3% body fat. He doesn't have the muscles like he does and all of that stuff. It's just your average guy saying, man, if I can't quit now, I know I have a quarter of 1% left. And if I don't give that, I'll never be able to live with myself. And that's the main lesson I've taken from Rocky. It is not about how hard you can hit. It is about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That's probably one of the best speeches Rocky has ever given. I think that's the best speech in any movie.
Absolutely. It's quoted over and over again online for a reason. And I'm with you. I figured we didn't talk about this beforehand, but I had a feeling you're going to pick that one. I think any true repeat viewer of Rocky would. And I think that scene becomes more powerful once you go back in the movie a little bit when he's lying on the bed next to Adrian. Speaking of Adrian, and he's saying, I can't do it. I can't beat this guy. And he's like, all I wanted to do was go the distance to prove to everybody that I'm not just another bum in the neighborhood. He's just at the point in his life where he just nothing is working. Nothing is firing for him. Nothing is. He just doesn't want to be another bum, another street corner, another pet shop worker, another guy on the docks. He wants to prove to himself and to the world that he's just not another bum from the neighborhood. So when he hits that canvas in the 14th round, he's crawling to the ropes to get up, and Mickey's yelling, stay down, stay down. He's like, no, ignoring everything around him. In his head at that moment, he's like, I just have to get up on my feet. And then he gets up. I love that scene too, where he motions Apollo, you know, I didn't hear no bell.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. And there's another scene that comes close to that, which is in Rocky Balboa. It never made the movie, but it was more like, it was a little sneak minute trailer that they had, a little promo trailer for Rocky Balboa. We only saw Rocky's eyes. The camera had the close-up through the ropes of Rocky's eyes and Rocky's down. And he says, you could hear the crowd in the background. And he goes, what was it you said to the kid? It isn't about how hard you can, it's about how hard you can get it. Get up. And Rocky's telling himself this.
Yeah.
He's telling himself to get up. Oh, my God. Talk about chills, man.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
I probably should have ended it on that note because I have one last question for you as an avid Rocky fan. Is there a scene in Rocky 1 that you wish they would cut out that doesn't work for you?
I think Rocky 1 is a perfect movie.
You passed the test. There is no scene.
There is no scene. There is no scene. To me, Rocky 1 is an absolute perfect movie. I can find no fault with it. And I examined that movie. Man, I've examined it over and over and over again, and I find no fault with it. And ipso facto, I just thought I'd bring this up for all the listeners. Someone asked me the other day, and I'm not going to mention no names, but his name rhymes with dying. He asked me, what's the first scene Rocky used his rubber ball in?
Oh,
and I doubted myself. And I should never doubt myself.
Oh, no.
Because the very first scene is when he's going by the pet shop right after Spider Rico.
He's got the ball in his hand, does he?
He's got the ball in his hand. And furthermore, this person who will go nameless, he said he thinks Rocky picked up the ball off the counter, off the pet shop. And when Rocky walked into the pet shop, Rocky's got the ball in his hand. You can see it. He's rolling it between his two hands as he's walking into the pet shop.
So
if you see a guy whose name rhymes with dying, let him know never to doubt Mike Kunda.
Well, I'll never make that mistake again. And let me tell you, Mike, we've offered that challenge and invitation. Please, please, we are not subject matter experts to any degree the way some others are. And we want to excuse the mistakes. One, because we know people are listening. Thank you for correcting that error. No, I love it. It's great that you caught that. It's great that
did you guys talk about the gun in between the windows where Rocky has the hunting rifle? When Rocky walks back and he and Adrian, they've already gone ice skating and they're in his apartment. Rocky is reintroducing Adrian to Cuff and Link, puts them down. Rocky moves to that crappy couch. So in the 2 seconds that Rocky takes to walk over, we see the two windows with the duct tape on it. In between the two windows, is a little spot of wall, and there's a gun, a hunting rifle, hanging there. For years, this aggravated me. Why is there a hunting rifle, and there's no mention in the script that Rocky used to go hunting with his dad or anything? So it bugged me. As we look around Rocky's apartment, there's bayonets, brass knuckles stuck in the crevices and cracks here and there. I thought, okay, maybe I guess it could kind of fit in here. You remember how Bob didn't have enough money? He was going to give him, take the coat, right?
Yep.
As payment. I think someone gave the gun to Rocky as payment so he wouldn't break their thumbs, and Rocky gives the gun to Gazzo, and Gazzo says, Rock, what am I going to do with a hunting rifle? I'll tell you what, it's your payment. That's what you get paid because you didn't collect the money.
Right.
So a couple of years went by, and I was able to have a correspondence with John Avildsen, the director of Rocky. And although he could not recall in the mythology of Rocky why the gun was there, he did know why the gun was there in real life. The gun was placed there as a prop by Stallone, according to John Avildsen, because it was a heirloom of sorts, and Stallone wanted to pay tribute to whoever the gun meant something to. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's awesome. That's awesome on both counts. One, the real story, or the real life story, and two, your theory. I think they're both awesome.
So I will be interested to hear if your listeners have a theory that makes more sense, because this is great stuff, and I'm going to be really looking forward to hearing all of your podcasts, and you know, I just wish you guys the best of luck. Anybody who goes to the lengths that you guys are going to keep Rocky alive, you guys have got to have it going on. So best of luck to everything.
Thanks a lot, Mike, and I hope we have you on again, because I'm sure we're going to have to get pick your brain for some subject matter expert debates.
Yeah, just call me. Go, hey, yo, I'll come right over and talk to you, you know. Might have to yell a little longer, though, you know, from Canada to Pennsylvania, but I'll hear you.
That's awesome, Mike. Hey, yo, we love you, brother. Keep up the good work, too, on your end.
Right here, man. I will be talking to you on Facebook, my friend.
You betcha.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Mike.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, what a story.
It is a great story.
Like, what a story.
Mike, you're a fascinating individual, and I'll tell you right off the bat, for me, when I talk to Mike, A, he puts me at ease right away. I feel like I'm talking to an old friend. I can see why his business as a tour guide in Philadelphia through the Rocky sites, and when you read the reviews and when people talk to him on Facebook, it's a little mystery why people are so enamored by him.
Okay, so those that are listening, where can they find them on Facebook?
We'll provide the link on our Facebook page.
Uh-huh. All right, so this is what you do, fellow Rocky fans. Go to Facebook, type in The Yo, comma, Rocky Film Tour. There you'll see a glove and his logo and Mike Kunda's friendly, inviting face there to check him out. So he's got reviews there. Every review is 5 stars.
Yeah.
Every review. If you're going to Philly, if you're in Philly or nearby, check Mike out.
Don't be a tomato, because he's not running a soup kitchen.
Exactly. Okay, what I find interesting is, had he, I don't know, what if the job, I don't know, like, how did he become
well, you mentioned the interview, remember? He mentioned in the interview that he had a, what do you call it? Civvy job, but it wasn't called. He was working for the man type job.
Okay.
He talks about in the interview, of course, that he was working for the man, that he had that kind of suit and tie type job, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't making him happy.
And you got to do what makes you happy.
You do.
I like that he did it. It works out. It rarely works out that you do something for the rest of your life that you're unhappy with.
How does he look? Does he look like he's Rocky a little bit?
Yeah, he does. He does. He looks like, obviously not identical.
No.
Like when I scroll, I'm like, hey, there's Rock.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's Rock's brother.
You can catch Mike Kunda on a lot of Facebooks, on a lot of YouTube videos. He's been on interviews. When you hear him talk and when you hear him in the interview, you can hear he does a few Stallone impersonations throughout the interview, and it comes naturally to him. And he sounds spot on. He has the mannerisms really down. He's worked on his walk, kind of a Rocky's gait when he strolls down the street. Mike has that to a T. I think this is fantastic how Mike will do the tour as Rocky. I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah. He's not a Stallone impersonator.
No,
he's not a Stallone. He's a Rocky impersonator.
Yeah.
Though we've said before, it's hard to tell the difference because they're kind of one and the same. No, he's a Rocky impersonator because obviously there is a difference.
So some of the highlights of his interview that stood out to me, he has met Stallone.
Now, I know.
Mike, this sounds totally corny. This is just how much I love Stallone. But I'm talking to somebody who's talked to Stallone.
Yeah.
So that's what, 1 degree of separation? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Like I remember as a 11 or 12 years old, you met the Ultimate Warrior, the wrestler at the airport.
Yes. Well, meeting was an interesting way of putting it.
Okay, well, what happened again?
Okay, yeah, sure.
What happened? Do you guys remember WWF? This is not WWE.
No, this is WWF. This is when the Worldwide Wrestling Federation was confused with the Worldwide Wildlife Federation. And some of the characters could have gone to either, or George the Animal Steel could have been part of both organizations. Coco Beware. He probably got the bird from the other one and took it to the wrestling one.
No, not funny.
You know, and awareness back to our brand.
Now, that brand officially now is World Wrestling Entertainment. You can no longer call yourselves the WWF because of the World Wildlife Fund, correct?
You say that with a smirk now. Don't get me hot.
Where are you?
Yes, this would have been 1990 at the height of Ultimate Warrior's career. May he rest in peace. Where I was at the Atlanta, Georgia airport, flying from Florida to Atlanta back to Seattle, Washington. I was with my friend on a trip to Disney World. So I'm sitting in the airport lobby. This is, of course, 1990. All you could do back then was read a book, kind of looking around, watching people. I see 20 feet away from me, a large fella sitting down in his chair in the waiting lobby. And my thought was at the time, I could see that he's big, hair pulled back in a ponytail. Of course, no makeup. So I see a large man. I'm a huge wrestling fan, but at this time, I'd never seen, you know, when Kiss took off their makeup for the first time?
Actually, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when Kiss did that, nobody recognized them.
Yeah.
In a weird way, because they were very strict about not having their makeup off.
Yeah.
Or to be seen with their makeup off. But then they did their first non-makeup tour. I've never seen all this, of course, before the internet. So there was no pictures that I could access that had Ultimate Warrior without his makeup on. So my brain thought that this was a football player.
Uh-huh.
A Seattle Seahawks football player. I wasn't a football fan, so my brain was operating under the assumption of, A, he's 20 feet away, he's a large man, we're flying to Seattle, he must be a football player. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because a couple people were going up to him, I saw him kind of, shoo-shoo them away. Like, leave me alone type gestures. I'm like, okay, fair enough, he's a football player, he doesn't want to be bothered. But then I kept looking at him, and I saw him looking back at me, and I was looking at him, I said, ah, you're the Ultimate Warrior. And he said, shut up. And I did.
Shut up.
And I did.
I'm biting the hand that feeds, eh?
But you know, I did.
Well, yeah.
I'm only 15.
Yeah.
This man is large.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a roid guy.
Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe their final breath. And if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others and makes them bleed deeper in something than larger than life, then his essence, his spirit, will be immortalized by the storytellers, by the loyalty, by the memory of those who honor him and make the running the man did live forever. You are the legend makers of Ultimate Warrior.
I'm not a celebrity. I understand. We all have bad days. Have you ever had a bad day and want to be left alone? For all we know, he's just having a bad day.
Yeah, sure.
I get it. I know it was rude. That moment was immortalized in my yearbook when it said that Ryan Rebalkin, met the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool experience. How did we get there?
I remember when that happened, I'm thinking, wow, my brother met the Ultimate Warrior.
Remember who Mom met?
Wayne Gretzky.
Mom met Wayne Gretzky. Now, yeah. That is a name you should know in hockey, everybody.
Yeah, I know Gretzky.
Our mother here, she would have been, 35.
Weird.
Yeah, like younger than we are now. Yeah,
because when I was a kid, that's an old woman.
Yeah, it's an old woman at 35.
Yeah.
But she would have been in her 30s. It's so cool that Mom did this. She bumped into Wayne Gretzky. Oh, here we go. Here shows you the little bit difference of character between a Canadian hockey player and maybe a roid up wrestler.
Maybe roid? Oh, please.
No, come on.
That's not raw egg yolks in the morning.
I'm sure the Ultimate Warrior, all he did was jog and drink raw eggs. So my mother actually bumped into the same park, within the same parkade as Wayne Gretzky. No entourage, nobody around him. And said, Mr. Gretzky, do you have a moment? My sons are big hockey fans. Would you mind signing your name 4 times for my 4 sons? Sure, no problem. Wayne Gretzky, 99.
Yeah, yeah.
So our mother met Wayne Gretzky.
Still have that in our photo album.
Yes, we do. Oh, and she also met Tim Reed from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah. Tim Reed.
Mike, you had that opportunity, and I said in the interview, and I'm not even joking, Mike gave the advice in the interview that if I were ever to meet Stallone, to not gush, just to have a normal conversation with him. He was given that advice by his bodyguard, which is great advice and sound advice.
Sure.
Does crying in front of a grown man count as gushing?
Well, if the tears are gushing out, then yes. Yeah. But if they're trickling down, then no.
And so Mike's talking about that, how he was so paranoid about when he was talking to Stallone that he didn't have any spittle coming out of his mouth, you know, basically freezing on his face type thing as he's talking. And so the highlight of this whole interview for me personally, Stallone told Mike, hey, you know, you do kind of look like me. Maybe you should do something with that. And Mike's like, what? So Stallone kind of gave him his blessing, like, you know, basically, excuse the pun, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
And go do something with that. Lo and behold, here he is doing something with that. He's wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
He's now, he is writing a second book, which he talks about in the interview. He does this, the Rocky film tour. So it's just an incredible, and the people he's met in the film, he's met Milo, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, from Rocky Balboa. Burr Young, he's had hours of conversations with him. Tony Burton before his passing.
This is a testament to Rocky, the film, and how it's affected, obviously it's affected Mike Kunda's life.
Kunda.
And our life, because we're doing the podcast regarding it. And
I hate Rocky. I'm only doing this out of...
It's really like podcasts.
It's just really like podcasts. We just picked Rocky. Sorry.
Anyways, and so this kind of made me think of art. The character Rocky, the film, it's a work of art that has stood the test of time for 40 years now. Before, we've talked about other movies that came out at that time, like Taxi Driver. So just to put in perspective of what was going on in 1976, music-wise, because you gotta think he's working out. He's listening to music. Okay, so this is what ended in 76. Ike and Tina Turner. How did that end again?
Handshake.
A Deep Purple. There was a punk band called Death that ended that year. But really not a lot of other things that are memorable. But what began that year, which would be under the umbrella of Rocky, if something, you know, new, was the band U2. Formed in 1976.
Wow.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
A new 45 called Anything That's Rock and Roll.
Also in 76, which, by the way, if you're having a bad day, Tom Petty. Scientifically proven you're going to have a better day.
Yeah.
Or at least the moment you're listening to it. The B-52s.
Tin Roof.
Rusted. You know, do you remember when that song came out?
Yeah, we were in junior high.
Yeah, that was like just...
I can hear this song right in my head right now.
Why, how can you not? Can you, listener, hear it in your head? The band Rat.
Remember?
Nice. Do you remember that band?
Do I remember Stephen Piercy?
I just remember I remember seeing the poster. I was like a little kid. It was at Dion's friend DL's house. He had the poster Rat, and I thought, that's dumb.
Well, when you name your band Rat, you have to do two T's.
Yeah, you gotta show that you're different. So yeah, some other bands that kind of came out that have stood the test of time.
Rat?
No, one band is The Gynecologists. They're no longer doing business.
There's a band called The Gynecologist.
The Gynecologist that came out. I'm just on Wikipedia here of bands that came out. We can't use that.
No. They weren't able to connect with their male fan base.
Oh.
That was a band you had to take lying down. Oh. I wonder if we can still take a peek at their catalog. Did any of their members pull out? So listeners, just picture in your mind, we just edited out about 5 different jokes that we cannot show you or listen to. But I assure you, the tears were wiping off our cheeks. They were good. They were funny. If you want to know the jokes we said, the puns that we said regarding the gynecologist band, send us a message on Facebook. We'll
tell you.
We'll tell you.
You'll enjoy the laugh. So, okay, other bands, The Cure. Black Flag. The Blues Brothers. And another band that I don't think has stood the test of time, but boy, they have a great name. Kick Axe.
Nice.
Kick Axe.
Nice.
AXE. But the reason why I brought up like U2 and the other bands, 40 years later, people are still interested. But the list of the bands that started, according to Wikipedia in that year, is very long. Nobody knows who they are, you know, anymore. They probably even forget. Like,
they're still alive.
What? Penetration? Who would even bet that? The jokes write themselves. So the point is, it's easier for music to stand the test of time.
No one ever says, oh, they're releasing their 15th studio album? Bands are really, in a way, just releasing sequels.
Sure, sure.
Because as a fan of a band, you're sort of expecting the same sound.
Yeah.
Style.
Well, with Black Sabbath, they first started as like a Beatles type of band.
Sure.
And they had a rehearsal hall across the street from a movie theater that played horror films.
Yes.
And then it dawned on them, like, oh, there's a market for that.
There was a horror movie, I believe, called Black Sabbath.
Do you believe in ghosts?
This is the night when fear and horror walk hand in hand.
This is Black Sabbath.
Starring the incomparable Boris Karloff, the personable Mark Damon, and lush and lovely women. Even though one is from the netherworld, a vampire, a Vordalak. Black Sabbath.
Well, you know what the name of the band was before they became Black Sabbath?
I forget. Cool.
Earth.
Earth. So yeah, they were really into that.
Yeah. Dark, grungy, kind of like...
Yeah.
Every Earth Day, I always put on Facebook, today on Earth Day, I'm listening to Black Sabbath.
Wow.
And I get enough likes to know people know what I'm talking about.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They obviously never liked it.
Nope.
With Black Sabbath, they decided to make kind of scarier, heavier music, darker music, find their fan base. But with movies, it's different. It requires time. And movies don't always stand the test of time. Rocky has, and I think it will forever stand the test of time.
Yeah, I can't imagine there'll be a time when someone says, oh, Rocky, that stupid old movie?
Yeah, exactly.
It's weird. I wonder what generation would be like, enough.
Well, I think anybody that watches it and gives it a chance will know it's just a great, great film. It's been lots of fun revisiting it. And how fun it is for Mike Kunda to kind of stay there, I guess you could say. Obviously, he emotionally is not there, but he gets to visit that character through his career.
And that was one of the, again, another highlight of the interview, that he talked about how he can never see Rocky again for the first time. Mm-hmm. Can never chase that high, like chasing the dragon,
sure,
so to speak.
Sure.
But what he gets to do in his job is to see the excitement of people seeing the stairs for the first time.
Yeah.
The statue for the first time. Mm-hmm. So he's always witnessing people's joy every day.
What a fun job.
I know.
No wonder why he's got such an infectious way about him. Yeah, he's happy.
So Mike, again, we just want to thank you for giving us a chance talking to us. I really hope we get to talk to you again. You're a Rocky expert, which again, we've been proven by Kyle, our guest co-host, and Mike.
Yeah, Kyle Patterson.
Kyle Peterson.
I know.
Oh, yeah. So both Kyle and Mike have shown us that Ruben and I have no business talking about Rocky, because there's just people out there who are just so knowledgeable and so even more passionate, expressed in different ways, or else, again, the world would be a boring place if we did the same thing the same way. So, Mike, your talents, I can't impersonate Rocky. As we've heard in previous episodes, I should not do voices, and I cannot do impersonations. Mike's right where he's supposed to be doing what he's supposed to be doing.
And I think us doing the podcast is what we're supposed to be doing, at least for tonight.
At least for tonight.
You know what I mean? And I think that's what anybody really should be doing. If you have a hobby, if you have a passion, if you want to give a go at something, go ahead and do it. Have some fun. You don't need to be perfect at it. What's that saying? You don't need to be great to start, but to be great, you have to start. I'm sure he's a better Rock impersonator now than he was when he first started.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's why Rocky trained.
He had to train.
Yeah, he had to train. You gotta get better, you gotta get sharper. And I think that's those kind of parallels is what makes, for me, the movie, the character resonate. Because clearly I'm not a boxing fan, as we learned earlier.
For the real sport in real life.
The real sport in real life, no, I'm not a boxing fan.
Right.
I don't have anything against it. I don't really have anything for it. I don't know who
you just you couldn't name four boxers.
I don't know who the heavyweight is. I was talking to my wife the other day with Muhammad Ali passing.
Right.
And I was talking about the speech that Ali gave before he was going to be fighting George Foreman.
Right.
And she said, the grill?
Oh, gee.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, why would he punch like a grill? Like, I mean, George Foreman was a boxer. Oh, was he?
All right. So what we're going to do is some serious cooking today. And one of the first things we want to do, George, is take a look at this. Right here on the cover, not only does it say lean, mean, fat-reducing grilling machine, what's that?
It has my name on it. And it's very important. When you do something and sign your name, that means you really believe in something.
Yeah.
So this machine was designed with George Foreman and the American people in mind that, hey, we're going to eat what we want, but we're going to knock the fat out.
She had no idea.
So her understanding of George Foreman was the grill maker.
Yeah, he just thought he was a guy that barbecued meat.
And he didn't even invent that.
No, no.
Who was it supposed to go to originally?
Hulk Hogan.
That's right.
Hulk Hogan. But Hulk Hogan has since made his money
elsewhere.
Elsewhere.
We'll get to that. We'll,
yeah, yeah.
Let's save it for Rocky.
We'll save Thunder Lips for Rocky 3.
To all my love slaves out there, Thunder Lips is here. In the flesh, baby.
Ruben, it's been a pleasure.
As always, it's been a pleasure.
So, Ruben, again, thank you for allowing me to be here today. It's been a good podcast.
A great podcast.
Mike, you're a good sport. Please,
you are.
Please
you
forgive are. Us. If you've listened this far, please forgive us. We're just two brothers with a sense of humor that maybe we only sense. So, Ruben?
Ding, ding.